At 5:07 a.m. this morning, the remarkable and historic life of Clarence M. Mitchell III made the transition to the ancestors. And I use that terminology because my father and my family taught all of us that this physical presence was only the beginning of a journey. And so while we do mourn, and I mourn the loss of my father today, I also celebrate the great life that he lived. I celebrate the historic life that he presented to all of us who are beneficiaries of the public policy initiatives and the other ways he impacted us as a family as well. I felt compelled to come in here today and share with you on my show, with you, just my thoughts about my father, because in a moment like this, when you are dealing with tragedy and you are a public person and you also have a father who is a public person, it's very difficult to grieve in some form of obscurity. Everything is in the public domain, and that's the price of being a public person. It's well understood that that's what happens. But I wanted to come in here today and just share with you the life of this man that was my father and that is my father wherever his presence is at the moment. Look, my father was a human being. He wasn't a deity. He wasn't a god. But he also was not. The difference that he made in this existence was truly individual. At the age of 13, maybe it was 12, 13, he went to the White House with my grandfather, Clarence Mitchell Jr., who was then the chief lobbyist for the Washington Bureau of the NAACP and very well known in Washington, went to the White House to see Harry Truman. Imagine a colored, at that point, weren't African Americans then, a colored, going to the White House to meet the President of the United States as part of a group of young people. And my father was born 4 years after, in 1939, 4 years after the last lynching in this state. So you have to understand the climate that he was born in to understand the reality that made him a freedom fighter, as he would call himself and others who participated with him would. He became a part of a movement that was long before Brown versus Board of Education, long before the whole sit-in movement down in the South. Maryland had its own form of racism. Maryland had its own form of segregation. And so my family birthed his reality into all of that. And he, in turn, with my sister, myself, and our children, his grandchildren, he instilled in all of us that reality of wanting to do something for someone else, of wanting to make a difference to improve the lives of someone else. And so my father, at the age of 20, went down south to join in Dr. King's Freedom Army. He wanted to be a part of the whole movement at that time. He was a student at Morgan State University. My grandparents were not too pleased that he dropped out of college to go down and do that. But when he got there, he and a group of other young people, including a very young Julian Bond, a young Marion Barry, a young Reverend Wyatt T. Walker, and all these young people decided they didn't want to be a part of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, Dr. King's movement. They didn't want to be with those older folks. They wanted their own organization. So they started SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And my father was the first treasurer for SNCC. And that involvement and being down south and witnessing that, even though Maryland had its own form of discrimination, it was so much more overt down in the South, made him want to come back home and make a difference. That same 20-year-old, as he turned 21 then, went to the White House again with my grandfather to meet a very young President John F. Kennedy. And when he met President Kennedy, he was telling him about what was happening in the South, along with some other young people there as well, about what was happening in the South. And President Kennedy said to all those young people, if you want to make a difference, run for public office. And after hearing that, my father transitioned his civil rights activist mode into elected office, being elected at the age of 22. And I share all that with you to help you understand the man that he became from that beginning, that experience, then surrounded by the family that he was surrounded by, with my great-grandmother, Lily Mae Jackson, who was the first president of the NAACP here in Baltimore, the first real president from 1935 to 1970. And like I tell people today, you know, it's easy to be a Christian today. Try being a Christian when they were sicking lions on you back in the day. It wasn't too easy being a Christian back then. Well, it's easy to be a member of the NAACP today. Try being the president of the NAACP in Baltimore back in 1935 when they were lynching people. It wasn't a very easy experience. So that is what my father grew up around. That is what shaped him and molded him into wanting to go into Annapolis and change the laws. When he got there, he was one of three blacks out of 140. You know, there are 141 members of the House of Delegates, 47 members of the state Senate. State Senate. He was one of three of 188. And so you can imagine what it was like down there. He could not eat in the same restaurants or go in the same places where his colleagues went in Annapolis. So his first piece of legislation that he got through and passed with his white colleagues, because they saw, his colleagues saw the indignities that he experienced in Annapolis, was the Public Accommodations Act of 1963. And that was before the Public Accommodations Act of 1964 that my grandfather helped shepherd through in Washington, D.C. That was this man. This man saw impossible odds and stood up against those odds and fought for those things. And what he did with his life, and by the way, no one's life is perfect. So you're going to hear a lot of different things about his life, and he would be the first to tell you he had many challenges in his life. But what he did was instill in his children and his grandchildren a sense to do something for someone else. If you'd asked me when I was 17 years old, you wouldn't have believed me going into public office or public life. I've ran away so far from run for office, you can't believe it. But I got a chance to travel with my father when he became the president of the National Black Caucus State Legislators. He helped to found this organization that had 42 different states represented across this country. And when he founded that, he shaped them into a political entity that then made a difference. When they went to meet with President Ronald Reagan, he as the president of the organization, he was chastised by other African Americans. Why are you meeting with President Reagan? He said, because he's the president. He's not a Republican president. He's the president of the United States. And that's the spirit that I've carried through or tried to in my life. I don't look at party. I don't look at what club you belong to. I look at your deeds. I look at who you are. And I got that from him. I got a lot of being able to fight and stand up and have a voice of my own from him. And I wanted to come in here today and just share with you, there's a statement that our family has issued, and I will give it to those who wish to have it as a part of what you've heard from my cousin, Delegate Kiefer Mitchell, and you probably hear from my uncle, former Senator Michael Mitchell. You'll hear from all of us at different times, but this statement, I think, capsulizes in many ways what my father's life was and is. We will be releasing information related to the services and what might be happening for my father, but I think it's just important for you to understand that this man was more than just, in many ways, for a lot of people, more than just a state senator. He would get up at 3 a.m. and go get someone's child out of jail. He would go stop someone's gas and electric from being cut off, even though my mother at the time, his wife at that time, would be upset with him for leaving to do that. He would help someone's child get into college where the barriers might be there and they couldn't get there. He considered himself truly more than an elected official. He considered himself a public servant, one to break down those barriers. I'm not going to take much of your time up now because I do have plans to make with my family, but I felt compelled to come in here in this vehicle that WBAL has allowed me to have. And I want to thank everyone here at WBAL and all of you, my audience, for being there for me and reaching out to me and all the love that's been expressed. I can't get back to all of you, but I will try one day. But I want to leave you with words that Teddy Kennedy said about his brother, Robert Kennedy, at his funeral. I'm going to change it up a little bit because of the venue. When he was asked about his brother meant, I'm going to talk about my father now with this. Don't make my father larger or smaller in life than he actually was. He saw wrong and tried to right it. He saw pain and tried to heal it. He saw racism and tried to stop it. Thank you very much.